Okay, go ahead.
This is Dr. Chetna Kripalu, and we're trying to talk about the subject of brain and mind and, you know, what's going on in there and, you know, cleansing. What does it mean by, what do you mean by that? Or taking away things in your mind. So I think we can start with the fact that everybody in their minds or brain interchangeably is conditioned to a point depending on, you know, all the way from in utero, what they've been exposed to, what they have perceived through their senses, what their circumstances have been, what have they been told, what belief systems have they acquired. All of this is stored in their minds and makes them behave certain way and produce certain thoughts in your brain. And makes most human beings, a lot of human beings, build your identity based on that. So let's try and see if we can invite, you know, people or, you know, kind of bring an invitation to ourselves to experiment on a new concept or a new idea. And what does that mean? To say that, are we able to disidentify with all the thoughts which crop up in our mind and give space or create space for something new? We don't know what the new is, but it definitely is something, you know, everything is changing. So why not create that space to see what can come up there? And once we're cleansed of all these old thoughts and ideas and everything, let's see what is left there. What is it there? And we don't have to put words in it. It's more of an experience that one can come up with.
So there's a question here. You used the word cleansing, and we've been talking about that. What is the meaning of this word to you? And how does that relate to self-mastery and meditation and self-development?
So cleansing means for me is literally, you know, observing and watching how your conditioning is, what is the structure of your mind, what is the function, the flow of thoughts. And that way what happens is you just don't get identified with the thoughts, any of the thoughts. It could be the most important thought or anything like that, but allow it to just pass by and let go. And when you let go of enough of these thoughts, the brain actually doesn't know what to do, and it has to stop at some point and come into this no mind or a silence, which is very different from suppressing all the thoughts and coming to a silence by focusing on something or anything like that. That cleansing is fascinating how you can come upon. And it only comes by, you know, experimentation of observation more and more and more as we go along. It's a habit because people don't know what that means. They don't even know they can observe their thoughts. They can observe their conditioning. They can observe the movement of thought. So that's what cleansing to me means.
So if I'm observing my thoughts, I am looking at my thoughts, my feelings, my memories, there is definitely all kinds of memory, all kinds of experience, personal experience. Each person has their own. So I have that experience, but it seems to me that what you're trying to present is that we can live in a way, or we can live a life where we are not caught inside the personal experience or the personal storehouse of experiences, which is our memory structure. There's so much there, and then from there arises all different kinds of negative and positive emotions, thoughts, and feelings. Envy, greed, jealousy, dislike, the conflicts that we have. All of that is generated from the memory structure or responses through the memory structure, interaction with the outside. We see that that is going on, but we use the expression that we're caught in that. as I was asking you before, what if someone says that, you know, that's just natural. That's just the way things are. People are not going to get along. There are differences in life. There are high social hierarchies and economic hierarchies, and that's just the way it is. And one should try to overcome others, and there's competition and all this kind of stuff, and the ego has a place in life. Let's say someone makes that kind of a statement or believes that, right? And comes to Angel Wing, comes to you. What is your take on such a statement? This is question number one. And I have some other questions on this, but before we get to your answer, I have another reflection on this, that if someone says that they accept their anger, their envy, the negative stuff, they accept the negative and the positive, does that mean, I would ask that person, does that mean that the person is expanding those states? If someone says, anger is natural, my response would be, okay, if anger is natural, is the individual saying that we can keep expanding that? Like, ego is there, but there are so many dictators and so many people who expand their ego. So the expansion of these so-called negative qualities would be there. And then there is also expansion of positive qualities, right? So there's expansion on both sides. But so what if someone says that both the negative and the positive can be expanded? But obviously we have boundaries around that. You know, we have laws that protect human beings from each other, that are on the books, that come from ethics, morality, etc. So just because someone wants to hurt others doesn't mean they can just go around doing so. So there's a boundary around that, which, like Freud would call that, the superego. So in reflecting upon this, how far does that expansion go, even if someone believes in it? And is it possible to like radically transform out of that? Which is what you're talking about, is that deeper awareness, that deeper transformation, observation, awareness, all those things that can cleanse the mind. So the word cleansing, again, it's a word that usually is understood in terms of like bodily cleansing or even like mental cleansing, or sometimes it's used negatively, like ethnic cleansing, things like that. The word is used in many different ways. But the mental cleansing would mean that there is pollution within the mind. And things like greed, envy, ego, harming others, conflicts, these are polluted states of the mind. Polluted, distorted states of the mind. Now, it seems to me that people would need to accept the fact that this is a distortion and there's a possibility of something different. So if you can elaborate on what do you think that is as far as self-mastery goes? You know, because even if people, those who are even trying to come out of this, they keep going back and forth. They don't really come out of it. They just swing kind of back and forth. So what are your thoughts?
So in my mind, cleansing doesn't only mean just bad thoughts or good thoughts. It's a combination. Because again, if we look at the structure and the function of our mind, whatever conditioning is causing certain thoughts, you know, whether positive, negative, it depends on that, you know, and they're all equal. They're all the same. So when you're talking about cleansing, we're talking about all the thoughts going away, coming to a point where that's the new phase which we're talking about, a new experience where there is no thought. How does it feel like to have no thought? Can something else be accessed when you have no thought? Is there a different or a new state you can get to, which is more constant, unlike the mind bringing up thoughts, which is, you know, up and down? So to the question about saying that it's natural, yes, it's natural, because again, the natural is different from different for different people. What some people can get angry about is very different from somebody else getting angry about something else. That depends on the conditioning. But yes, these feelings of envy, jealousy, anger, frustration, irritability, and at the same time, joy, you know, being happy, pleasure, you know, all that stuff. So it's a mixed emotions you can have. But the more we watch and observe how this flow occurs and where it's coming from, what kind of conditioning has made it that way, allows us to look at ourselves in a whole new way. And that can even give us an idea about, at that point, to learn the futility of both of these thoughts, both kinds of thoughts, whether it's positive, negative, or anything like that. And that is self, you know, discovery for me, and self-mastery. The more and more we can do it, we can stay in a state, I would say, call it a neutral state, where you're not yielding to these thoughts or this, you know, which are arising from a specific kind of conditioning, which can give us a whole new perspective about how we as human beings could be much more than just human, if we call it. And if each of us do that, then we would have a whole new world where we are not competing or fighting with each other. You cannot help other people when they're misbehaving or doing things and everything. And I don't think anybody can. But we are talking about only ourselves, looking at our mind and everything which goes on in our mind. And what can we do about it, being more and more, as we study about anything, and if you think about knowledge, don't we focus and lead hours and hours and hours of, you know, learning about things as far as knowledge? But what were we doing here is, we're talking about the psychological aspect of the mind. We're not talking about, focusing, concentration, learning, knowledge, and things like that. We are talking about more in terms of how we live, never in the present moment. And the reason is because we are dwelling on these, you know, the conditioning which is causing these thoughts and memories from the past. We're projecting, which is projected into the future. So there is this psychological war going on inside the mind, which is what we're troubled with. There is no human being that I have seen, unless they are in a different state, who is always not, you know, fighting, one part of the mind not fighting with the other. Because that's the fragmentation created in the mind. And so nobody wants to live like that. If you really look at majority of people, what is stress? They're saying, oh, I'm always stressed. I'm confused. I'm overwhelmed. I have ADHD. I have, you know, all this kind of stuff. These are all different fragments of the mind, which is completely broken. It's
just a quick question on what you just said. Nobody wants to fight in the fragmented mind internally.
I want a state like that.
Yes, because there's pain there. And there's also drainage of energy. There is also this sense of energy being stuck or stagnated. So essentially what you're saying is that there is a different type of energy that is released when this internal dynamic of that is conflict related, that is what we call these negative emotions, envy, greed, lust, hate, whatever, you know, hyper-focused emotion that doesn't really make us feel good. It's not happiness. It's like an ego state, twisted. And not wanting that is a big thing. But I think people give lip service to say, we don't want that. But I think it's much deeper than that. So if you can talk about, what do people need to do to not want that? I mean, they say they don't want that, but then that's just another thought that just comes and goes.
Yeah, most people don't want that because there is an unrest, there's resistance, there is a feeling like heaviness, there is a strain on you, which you know that it's like the best way to describe is the heaviness which you feel, and everybody can agree to that nobody wants to feel like that, which can be labeled as deep depression, mild depression, anxiety, bipolar, all the psychiatric illnesses which have come about is all in how the mind construct is or how its conditioning has become, and people are not able to get out of that. So most people want to do that, but they don't know it's possible and how it can be done.
Or even to acknowledge that it is possible.
Yes, exactly. And no, most people think it's possible, but they have to go to the doctor and then they get medications and it's all about neurotransmitters and balancing them and everything. While that is true, yes, that is to some point, but it could be done in other ways of, deliberately taking time to literally watch, because that gives them a perspective that you, there is something, some other state which is observing your thoughts in the first place. And what does that mean? That means you don't have to identify with these things which has given you this personality. So, and yes, it's a big thing, because it's a revelation, and then it's almost, the next question is, who am I? That means I'm nothing? That means I am nobody? But while that is difficult for some people, for it's difficult, I guess, for some people who are riding on their egos. For example, like a politician or a celebrity or, you know, whoever it is, a football star or basketball star or whoever, if their whole identity is based on power and fame and all of that, if we tell somebody like that, and they would be like, then I am nobody. I am, you know, because again, yes, in a way it is nobody, because we are all the same when we get to that state of same thing. It works same for them to observe their mind. What are they identifying with? What makes this ego grow bigger, which is the false self, which is a reflection of our, you know, real self. So I think that has to be done to really, you know, transcend many of these emotional upheavals we have. I think most of the time when people say this is life, this is all there is, it's almost like their false sense comes in to protect them from some inevitable, you know, danger in the future. But that is not the truth. I wouldn't say reality. I would say that is not the truth. So one has to be open enough and expansive enough to open their minds, open their hearts to the new, whatever is going to come new, and to really discover, you know. So that has to be created, that attitude. They say there is something, first of all. Right. And if there is something, how do I do it, you know?
So just that attitude, that desire to do this, itself begins the cleansing process.
Yes. Exactly.
And it, which is a process. Mm-hmm. Again, the words are not perfect, because, you know, we can see if there's dirt on the body or mud on the body, we can take a shower and get rid of it. But the, quote, pollution in the mind, a polluted mind, a sick mind, a damaged mind, mm-hmm. a hurt mind,
yes,
all of that needs to be changed into a state of a healthy mind. So the cleansing process is, it seems to me that it is a state, it is a way of reestablishing the health of the mind. And if the mind is healthy, then it can be in a position eventually to see the totality of its conditioning. It's not a broken, torn apart mind that can even possibly see any of that. What do you want to say something about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we look at ourselves, you know, like, for example, I know, which we've talked about before, yes. If you look that, we know, all of us know, we have different parts of the body, even when you cannot see it. Like, let's see, if I close my eyes, I know I have a face, I know I have a head, I know I have arms, I have neck, I mean, different parts of the body. Even a blind person knows these are all the organs they have and everything. But when you stand in front of the mirror, you see a reflection there.
Yes.
And that is what you are identifying with.
Yes. It's a reflection.
And imagine that as you age, as his body ages, your reflection in the mirror is going to keep changing. So if you go with that, that is why your mind, if it identifies with that face, if that reflection, it's going to keep changing.
So the mind itself could be a reflection.
Exactly. That's the point. So if you're thinking of mind as a mirror, then the face you're going to see, or whatever you're going to see in it, is going to change. Yeah. So that is what is going on here. And the moment you realize that, then you know that that is not constant. So you don't want to give too much value to that, or too much, or identify with it.
Well, that's the problem. That's what we do. We give so much importance to certain strong emotions, thoughts. It's, it almost seems to me that if these things come about, to recognize the strength within them And if we recognize the strength within them, then there is a retraction out of that emotion, and the same energy becomes available in a different way. There's like a release of energy. Is that, what do you say? No, maybe you can explain that even in terms of brain function also a little bit.
No, absolutely. So every time we have a thought which is not pleasurable or, you know, which for you is draining, yes, you the energy, it takes away a lot of energy. But, and this is why we come to the point, at least from my perspective, is that each of us are connected to the rest of the world here. We are a part of this universe. We are a part of this world. So when we are not thinking, or when our mind doesn't think towards a collective thing, which is for the betterment of somebody else, or, you know, for example, if I'm loving towards someone, it's not just me. It's my love is being transmitted to 5 other people. So it enhances. And so that energy, which is being more constructive. While if it's an envy, that is no good to anybody else. So it's draining. So you're giving that energy to that person or angry with that person. So it's depleted because we only have finite amount of energy in our being. So imagine if you have 60,000 thoughts a day like that, which, I mean, nobody has that negative thoughts, but they do, some people. So that is when you're completely drained. I have seen patients. In fact, I can think of somebody who gets into this funk, as I can call it, or a state where she's in bed for 2 to 3 months at a time. Wow. She needs aids to get up from the bed. So I think this is a massive amount of energy drain, or which is caused over obviously years, because the body tries to cope so hard with the mind, and when it has to give up, when, you know, all the energy is drained out of the body, and it is, you know, not conserved at all. There's a leakage. There's a massive amount of leakage. And so that's what happens. So I think most people will agree, and this I think universally human beings know, that you don't feel good when you've had bad thoughts in a day, and it's draining. The fatigue and the stress at the end of the day from mental energy being drained is very different from physical. If somebody is working hard all day physically, or doing exercise for that matter, like massive amounts of running and all, you let go, you can easily recover by sleeping, and you can do that. But on the contrary, when somebody is drained energetically, yeah, they can't even sleep.
Right. So that's a very interesting difference there. There is a difference between a healthy use of energy by exercise or walking or running or, you know, weights or whatever it might be, yoga, Zumba. There's a healthy use of energy, healthy again, we don't want to use the word drain, but it's definitely a healthy use. But then emotionally, because of tension, stress, worry, the damage done psychologically, mentally, the energy keeps getting drained into those psychological funnels. It's just drained inside there, which then of course impacts the body very severely.
Right, exactly. Because with exercise and physical, you're actually energizing the whole body. Yeah. You're gaining more energy. With this, you're losing everything. Yeah. We have like so many meridians as per Chinese medicine. We have all these nadis, 75,000 in ancient Ayurveda. Then we have radiant circuits. Our whole body, essentially, we are energy beings. In energy, you know, like the vortex of energy, or a whole it's a whole energy construct, yeah, system, yeah, which is covered by this flesh and, you know, yeah, organs. So
this is also energy.
Exactly. But I'm just saying, even if you want to think about it like that, as an energy, you know, like a voltage of electricity covered by, you know, your flesh and bones. So this is, and it depends on your mind. So that's how important mind is. So we want to make sure that we are recognizing that, first of all. Once you recognize this, there is lots of ways to move around it and everything. And again, it's a constant, deliberate work which we have to do, just like we do anything else. We know we go to work in the morning, we work hard during the day, we spend so much time on it. But we need to do it inward, so you can actually function better on the outwards. You can take what comes your way. You can do more, use more constructively. You're not getting into those emotional draining states of all these other negative emotions, like, you know, envy, jealousy, and all of that. Because I think those come because, again, it's conditioning from society, it's conditioning from your belief systems, which tells you that, oh, you cannot live together, you have to be competitive because nobody's going to take care of you except for yourself. You are responsible for only you and your family. So all these becomes more contracted. It is not expansive. Right. So it obviously gives you more stress. You know, how can you do that? How can you be responsible only for your own family? How much can you save? How much can you do for them? It's impossible. There is no limit to that. So that is draining, obviously. And that's a bad, you know, cycle to be in. And unfortunately, it's become like that.
Yeah, so in the cleansing process, as you're describing all of this, there is a purification. Again, we're using the language, but that's not adequate, obviously. But we do the best we can. There would be a qualitative direct experience of a steady mind, a clear mind, and a purified mind. So in my perception, these three are together. Steady mind, clear mind, purified mind. And in doing so, the energy that is flowing, it begins to flow in a much more pristine manner. Can you say something about that?
I think they mean like it's stages, you know. First is to steady mind, which happens like in glimpses, like, you know, short periods of time during meditation when the mental chatter is not there. But, you know, really the best what I have seen, even more than meditation, different techniques where you follow the breath and all of that, it is really, it's hard though. It's a thought habit to be built where you're watching and being aware of where your mind is going. The more you do it, the more steady you can be and more clear you can be, because you learn to let go of most of these thoughts, you know, which are not constructive. For example, yes, you want to use your mind for the benefit of, you know, if you have a problem to solve it or to do things and plan and, you know, all those things. But we are not always doing that. So most of the time, the brain is thinking of so many different things, which, you know, not necessarily needs to be the case. So in that way, if you constantly get into the habit of noticing where your mind is, then it will help you get to the stage of clear mind also. So, and again, the next stage is more and more and more clarity comes in. You learn that all these emotions have no meaning in your life, meaning to dwell on it, essentially. So they're there for a reason. So we have to feel them, because that's what human beings are. We need experiences in our life. The emotion is given for you for, you know, a reason to be human. You know, those are all the experiences of human beings too. Feeling, that's why they call it feeling, because you have to feel them. But after a while, we don't have to dwell in it and keep a memory of it, keep the baggage in our system somewhere, you know, whether it's subconscious and conscious, that's what becomes heavy. So we learn to let go of them as and when we feel it as an experience and come to the state of purification. And of course, you know, the best way to live is a purified mind, when you are completely kind of shielded in your inner state, which is, you know, can be touched by any circumstance outside or anybody, anyone for that matter, or anything.
So when energy comes together, because energy then is going to coalesce, is going to harness, as we have been saying, that is where the leap could happen into that whole state, the divine, the transcendental, the unknown, God, whatever it is, the Atma, something beyond the limited mind. However one may go about it, maybe it's done in a religious way through one of the great spiritual teachers, or the Bible, or the Gita, or the Dhammapada, or the whichever scripture it might be, or whichever approach somebody might take. A pristine mind. You know, this word was popping into my mind the whole time we were talking about cleansing. Then images popped up of, you know, of churches and temples, and the whole purification idea is a very religious idea in many ways. So many religions talk about purification. It's interesting because it really implies that there is a contaminant, or that there's contamination within the mind, like almost like a contaminant in water. If you have beautiful distilled water or spring water, and you put some dirt and mud and other things inside there, it's contaminated, or there's a lot of bacteria in there. It gets contaminated. So mental contamination needs to be detected, just as physical contamination does. I think we are probably better at detecting physical contamination than mental contamination. Let me brush our teeth every day in the morning as a simple example. Why? We want to get rid of all the bacteria and the bad breath and destroy all the germs and have mouthwash and so many things we do on a day-to-day basis to keep the body away or to keep it clean. Isn't it so? Mm-hmm. Right? So similarly, if that much attention is placed on purification and cleansing of the mind, then that would eventually lead to self-mastery, personal transformation, human upliftment. This is my understanding. What do you say about this?
No, absolutely. So another way of looking at it is, you know, when people don't like the word purification a lot of times, because that means we're not perfect, we're not the way, you know, like all of that. So I would rather look at it this way. Like if you have some kind of antique buried in, you know, like, you know, archaeologically, like way, way down. And if it's even a jewel or like a old, old painting, which is full of grime and, you know, layers of dirt on them. And you are using all the techniques to get rid of this grime or this, you know, coating or by different processes. Sometimes you have to use different chemicals or, you know, all these things which help you, you know, clean out the stuff on top without damaging the painting or the jewel or whatever your, you know, the precious, you know, thing it is. And then you unveil it as, my goodness, I didn't know this was the original piece. And it had all these coverings. So while we come perfect and self-actualized into the world, we don't know that. We have not given the tools at that point, the memory or anything. So you have, and the premise could be your whole evolution or your whole idea of being in this earth could be to discover that and nothing else. So people get lost in the fact that why am I here? What is the purpose of life and everything? So I think sometimes it just leads to self-discovery and figuring out all this thing, whoever your, you know, pure soul you are, and to discover that the purity in you and the perfection in you. But the problem is when you're born, even from before, your whole environment matters so much that everybody tells you different things, who you are and your circumstances. So you don't know that you're this perfect being. So you build on this artificial, you know, construct, and this layering, which we talk about. So you bury yourself, the deep soul or the deep pure soul is completely buried. And all these, you know, layers and layers and layers of false layers are created. And sometimes you never learn that there is a pure soul in it and how perfect you are. And that's why people commit suicides and people, you know, take their lives out, because they don't know. They live in those layers, and that layer is changing every day and telling you new things, and old things are already there. So it's very difficult for people to live like that when you identify with that. So I think more I would call it unveiling than purification, if that makes sense.
Yes, that's a good way of putting it. And there's also the word identification, you know, to identify with something, to identify with a particular strong thought. When there's a strong thinking or strong emotion, certain memory comes up, there's really a sense of just being overrun by that or just being in that. I think that's what is meant by identification, that you feel you're one with that. That's you, that's me. When a person starts feeling that way or identifying with it, do you feel that when that happens, at the time that that happens, they can actually start the de-identification process while they're in the wake of that? And not just, you know, hindsight is 20/20, but wait until all the damage is done and then. So what do you say about that point?
You can, but again, you know, you have to be practicing that before. So because at the stressful time, nobody has, you cannot do it. So this is why these practices are important when you are, you know, when you are not in that situation, when you identify with that, you know, drastic situation, whatever you're in. So idea is to do it before, so that when that situation comes, or when the mind goes into the identification part of, you know, the state where it identifies with whatever is going on, you can release yourself from the clutch, unclutch yourself, and then, you know, not let it affect you.
And that happens in the moment. So really, so all the meditation and even prayers or other things, any psycho-spiritual practice of any kind, meditative yoga, etc., that we're all doing now, even in Angel Wing, all of that is in many ways, not completely, because it helps the person along the path also, but it's in many ways it's a preparation to be very aware when the identification process begins. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yes. So one has to do the right kind of approach. You know, general prayers and general thing is okay, but you got to do this being aware of your structure and function of your thought and everything on a daily and a moment, like almost like, if not 24 hours, you know, you're sleeping, of course, a few hours, 8 hours. But the rest of the day, even if we can start doing it more often than before and get better and better and better at it, then it'll be like, you know, like a subconscious reflex of doing this when the actual need comes and when it comes. Because remember everything, like how do we brush our teeth? We know, we're not reminded of it. And how do you drive from home to work without thinking about it? You want something like this to become your reconditioning or a new conditioning where you're automatically aware of everything going on, and especially when a stressful event comes, when you have the force of habit to identify with that emotion or that feeling or whatever comes, you learn to withdraw yourself and detach yourself from it.
And then there's also a greater vision of that particular situation in the moment itself, because this is really where rubber hits the road. I mean, you know, that's the practical aspect of it. That's the only real thing that matters anyway. That if we want to say, I want to be in a state of compassion and go beyond getting angry all the time with different people, just a simple example like that. Well, all right, I may want that, but I have to do the preparation work. And then when the situation comes about, which it will, that's the time for intelligence to break out and say, what's the best way to deal with this? So it almost seems like that intelligence has more energy to look at the situation in a new light. Do you want to say something?
Yeah, because even physiologically, you know, when you're stressed out, you know, there's different things happen. When you're stressed out and identify with the stress, your hormones take over and the brain shuts down. So then you are not able to think about it. So when you prepare yourself before, you have this ability when the brain doesn't shut down and allows you to think a little differently and look at the picture from a different angle or as a whole and say, wait a minute, I don't think it makes any sense for me to get angry at this situation because I can deal with it a little differently and have a different approach.
So and one can also think of it in terms of energy, that I just don't want to waste my energy in this.
Yeah, but unfortunately, not everybody thinks about energy at that time.
No, I think
it's more about saying that, how do you solve that situation or how to get out of the situation? Yeah. So that's more saying that I have a different approach. Yeah. All I'm going to do is take a few breaths and detach myself and see how I can respond to it.
So in terms of the cleansing and the transformation of the mind, there is definitely energetic transformation. What do you say about keeping attention on the energy itself? It's a very difficult thing to do, I think, in the beginning, but you know.
It is. I mean, again, different approaches for different people. So if somebody is very, you know, identified with energy draining and energy conservation
and can recognize it,
absolutely. That's the best way to work.
Yeah.
But some people don't. They're in the mind level. And then so you have to deal with it then in a different way.
And then eventually get to recognizing the way energy flows.
Exactly. So what I have seen in my experience is most people benefit from just deep breaths. Because breath is amazing how it can lower every response in your body, bring your heart rate slower, not allow you to become sweaty, and get you in that field of parasympathetic phase where your brain is open, and you can actually think more logically, or, you know, in a quiet phase where you can make better decisions. And that is more helpful immediately, because everybody knows they can take deep breaths.
Well, you know, you use the word decision, and that's a very important thing. There's something called decisional balance in psychology. There's two concepts. One is self-efficacy, the other is temptation. We're tempted to do so many things that we know are harmful. Maybe it's with food, maybe it's with certain things that we want to say to someone or whatever, right? There's temptation. The word temptation implies that if you take that path, there's harm or some problem could occur. That's why the word temptation is even there. As opposed to self-efficacy, is that I can actually not succumb to the temptation, but take a very nice, beautiful, different path away from that, you know, without getting into that battle, as you were talking about before. To develop self-efficacy, and where the decisions are taken, the right decision that really energizes the body, mind, that really, you know, keeps one's progression towards self-mastery intact. If the progression has begun, which it has in some of people in our group at this point, if it has begun, then it needs to be protected and kept intact towards self-mastery. You want to say something about this?
The energy? Yes.
Well, about the path towards self.
Yeah, absolutely.
If you start the path, you need to be protected by, you know.
Yeah, definitely. But again, that comes with practice, right? Yeah. Every moment, if you keep practicing more and more. Again, we don't want to be identified with saying that, oh, I'm not good at it, and leave it. Because this is a lifetime, journey. So we're not talking about self-mastery in a day or two, and even for years. It may be till the end of life. But you have to understand that everything you do towards it is going to make you, feel that you're on a path for progress. So I think internal progress, and it'll automatically help you deal with things much better than before. You may not be at, you know, again, there is no expectation, there's no end game, there is no end point. Right. We are not looking at all of that. All we are saying is we're going to keep doing this better and better. Essentially, basically, today was this day, but tomorrow is going to be better. Then the next day will be better. The next day will be better. And that's all we want to aim at.
And that is really what self-mastery is about. Self-mastery is not a finite goal that I've taken all these steps and I've got there. Because if somebody gets caught in that, then they will stop progressing anyway. So to really believe that I can keep moving ahead from wherever I am, that belief itself will keep the progression further, and eventually self-mastery becomes a dynamic progression rather than a fixed point. Would you say something more?
No, absolutely. So there is no fixed point. So the best way to do it is don't make it measurable. And don't make it that it's quantitative, you know, and saying it needs to be. Again, this is mind coming in between, yeah. Telling you, because you're so used to goals, you're so used to quantify things, yeah. You're so, it's always having expectations out of something. No, we're not. We're not doing that. That the whole idea is to get away this construct from the mind, which is trying to tell you things. So the more we get away from that as a practice, you're going to see it even help you in every aspect of your life, how you deal with different things, different people, what expectations do you have from people and from life and from, you know, tomorrow. So you learn to live in the present more and more. All you have to do is separate yourself from the mind, you know, detach from your mind. Because when you detach from the mind, you live in the present. And that's the most beautiful state to live in. And the more and more you do it, you'll see amazing things come in your life. New insights will come. New inspirational stuff will come. You never knew you had. Because you're always, what happened till now is you were so intensely, covered by all these thought processes. You had no time to know that you had all these insights and all these creativity insights. So everything falls in place. So it all comes through.
Yes. Okay. That is really quite an exposition, quite a dialogue. So that was Dr. Chetan Kripalu with the Angeling Program. She's the founder CEO. Please visit us on the web at www.angelwing.com. Please do stay in touch with us through dialogues and meditations and any other means you would like. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.